Okay, the psukim begin on page 478, pasuk tes. It's Paragimel pasuk tes. We're going through it very, very quickly. Shimon Zois Rashi Beis Yaakov Ugetini Beis Yisrael. Listen now, please, the leaders of Yaakov and the leaders of Yisrael, Ham Sa'adim Mishpat, who detest judgment, Mishpat, justice. V'yes Kol HaYishara Yaakeshu. Everything that is straight and correct, they make crooked. We learned two perushim what this means. Either it means they build tzion with blood, they murder people, they steal their wealth, and they use those funds to build for themselves palaces. Or it was a rhetorical statement question: do you really think Hashem will allow tzion to be built upon a foundation of blood? V'yushalayim be'avla, through wrongdoing, pasuk yud aleph, rashecha b'shechal yishpaitu, v'choyanecha b'mechir yoyru, u'nevi'echa b'kesef yiksoimu. Three different elements of society, different forms of leadership, they're all thoroughly corrupt. And yet, the hypocrisy is unreal, v'yal Hashem yisha'inu leymar, they make believe, business as usual. They say, we rely upon Hashem, halay Hashem b'kirbeinu, lo savor leinu ra'a. So we learned this already in a lot of detail. We spent a lot of time on this. We learned Rashi. We learned there was no Rashi. I think that was Mitzudos David, Radak, Malbum. Now let's look at the Mamori Chazal. The Mamori Chazal begins. The Olam Mamori Chazal begins on page 479, on the very, very bottom. 479. Likutei Shas u'Midrashei Hatanoim. Shimu no Zois Roshei Beis Yaakov Ketzini Beis Yisrael Ham Sa'avim Mishpat Tanya. Rabbi Yosef ben Elisha Omer, Imer Isa Darshet Tzoros Rabbeis Va'os Olaf. If Rachmana Litzan, you see a generation where they are suffering very much. Tzei Uvidoik B'dayoni Yisrael. The first place to go make an inspection are the judges. Go check out the courts, the Jewish courts, and see what is going on there. Shekol Puronis Shabbo Li'olam Lo'ybo Ella B'shvil Dayoni Yisrael Shem Avsim Es Hadin. It's only because of the court system is corrupt, as it says the pasuk that we've just read. Shimon Ozois Roshei Beis Yaakov Ugetini Beis Yisrael Hamasavim Mishpat Yis Kol Asher Yaakeshu Boine Tzion Bedamim Yishlaim Ba'Avla Rashecha B'Shecha Yishpoitu V'Chaynecha B'Mechiyaru Neviyach B'Kesef Yiksoimu V'Al Hashem Yishenu. Period. Rosh Rishoim Hain. They're wicked. Ela Shetolu B'Tchaynem B'Mish Amar V'Hoyi Hoylam. They're just hypocrites. They're wicked, wicked people, and yet they make believe. They make believe everything is fine and good. We did not yet learn this. Okay, this coming up next. Okay, this pasuk is there are two pasuk in Tanakh that are almost identical. One Micha, and the same thing was said by, I think, Uriah. Was said by Uriah, who's quoted in Sefer Yeshaya. I'm forgetting. I prepared this. We'll see that. The Nesu will come to the next pasuk in a few moments. Lachein biglalchem, because of you, because of the corrupt leaders, the three different types of corrupt leaders, three forms of punishment will come upon the nation. Tzion sadeh secharesh. Tzion will be plowed over like a field. Number two, v'Yerushalayim iyin tihiyeh, will be a wasteland for wild animals to roam about. And number three, Vahar Habayis Livomos Yoar, will be a place, a high place, of like a forest. It'll just be, there'll be nothing there, it'll be desolation, it'll be like the high places of the forest where no one ever goes. They're afraid to go there because there may be some wild, vicious animals, maybe poisons. People do not like to venture out into the forest, certainly not to areas in the forest that have not yet been analyzed. Who knows what you'll find there? Dangerous creatures, poisons, even trees. We know from Chazal in ancient times there were even trees that would swallow up people. Had life like the Adonai HaSodeh, had lifelike characteristics that if you come too close to the tree will crush you, will swallow you up. So you don't like to venture out into the forest, into the unknown. Okay, it's not a very pleasant place to be.
It's a plant.
A very tall plant, whatever it is. They have it still today, such type of plants? Do they still have today such type of plants?
Sure.
That swallow people?
Jungle
the jungle, yes. So these are, that's the bummos you are.
They close up on you.
They detect. They have a sensitivity. It's a very fascinating thing that they can detect that a human being is coming in its vicinity, and to protect itself, it squeezes you out. It gives you a hug. Such a hug, you don't escape. So this is what it's, so here we have in the very next pasuk, which we've not yet learned yet, because it's a very incredible chazal, that there are three different types of leaders that are corrupt. Corresponding to the three corrupt leaders, there are three punishments. And I guess there's a parallel. And this will require some thought, insight to understand the exact parallel. What's the connection between tzion being plowed over by a field? How does that relate to the corrupt Rosheha who judge bin Odom Lachaveroi corruptly, without justice? That's Tzion.
The leaders are corrupt and the people suffer. Is that just?
Of course not.
Let the cows come out on the leaders.
So you're asking a question, why do the people have to suffer if the leaders are corrupt? So we mentioned this yesterday, and we alluded to it. We mentioned one of the Mefarshim expressed this in the few seconds back, and that is, in Klal Yisrael there are checks and balances. There's no such thing as absolute power. A leader is subject to people. He has to answer to his people. No one has absolute power. This is not a communist regime. This is not a totalitarian society. Just because there's a melech, there's a king. The king, if the king does not behave, the king is not just, then the people, it's within their rights, within their power to remove him from his authority. Ein melech b'loyan. Mr. Potter? Ein melech b'loy am. The people, you're saying very good. What you're saying is that there has to be somehow in society some type of mechanism, legal mechanism, where people have the power to take down their leaders if they feel they're not being served. Now, where do we see such a thing? I'm not aware.
Totalitarianism.
It would appear that Judaism in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, Malchus was a totalitarian society, where the Melech rules with an iron fist, and that's the way it is. But it cannot be.
Go back to Paro, for example.
Yeah.
That's an absolute.
Paro. That was Paro. When we have to go back and study the rules of Malchus. When it's the parsha coming up, Parsha Shoftim, where Klal Yisrael says, the day will come when you'll ask for a king. You'll want to have a king. And Moshe Rabbeinu tells them exactly all the rules, parameters of a melech. And when Klal Yisrael did indeed ask for a king in the time of Shmuel, and Shmuel was insulted, how dare you ask for a king, he then went on to tell them what the rules are. Certainly, if we analyze those psukim very, very well, it has to come out that the Malchus of Klal Yisrael is not set up with the same set of rules and guidelines that we find in the secular world. Because since, you asked me a very good question, since the Nagavir, Mr. Cohen, what's your first name?
Shlomo
Cohen. Since the pasuk here is coming, and this next pasuk is coming to the lechem, because of these sins, the entire Klal Yisrael will suffer. It's not fair. Torah is all about being fair, justice. Why should the entire Klal Yisrael suffer because there are some empty cans out there? The answer is because the people put them in their power. The people continue to cheer them on. And that has to mean, by definition, that the people have the power.
They get a good salary in private industry.
Well, there's bribes. The pasuk tells you that these people, they serve, the 1% is calling the shots. They're the ones that are paying the bills. They're telling the judges.
Well, these people are bad. But, you know, what happened, I'm thinking, in time of Shlomo,
Shlomo, who did not follow the rules of the monarchy.
Correct.
Was there anyone speaking up? Because maybe
yes,
that's the
yes.
Source.
You know who spoke up? You know who spoke up? Yeravam ben Nevat. And in fact, Yeravam ben Nevat was originally given, you have to see the Mamari Chazal, very, very high praise for what he did. He was the whistleblower. And he was given very high praise. He was a tzaddik. And Hashem gave him a yashar koyach for what he did to give Musar to Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech committed three crimes. One of the things he was Mileyas HaMelo. He took away, he shut down the Central Park. Make believe the equivalent. Essentially, there was a Melo. There was a public area in Yerushalayim that was a park basically for the entire Klal Yisrael. And he decided, you know what? I want to build a nice palace. My palace is not big enough, so I want to eminent domain. I want to absorb the public park. I'm going to put up a big fence. I'm going to make it into my private property. I'm going to build my house there as well, and no citizen will be allowed to enter. What gave him the right to do that, to take that away from Klal Yisrael? That was their property. And Yeravam ben Nevat got up in front of the whole Klal Yisrael and said, our Melech is corrupt. And he was praised for his Musa, because in Malchus of Klal Yisrael, it's exactly the point, it's not like the Malchus of the Umar Soilam. In the Umar Soilam, if you start up with the Melech, you're dead. Okay, you open up your mouth against a king who has absolute power, you won't live out the day. But that's not the way. The Malchus of Klal Yisrael is not like that. They are the entirely different set of rules. We are not familiar, unfortunately. We don't know the tech. There has to be a legal mechanism where people, you know, not just like, you know, a coup, everyone they know secretly, surreptitiously, behind the scenes, they get together and they form a rebellion, they overthrow leadership. It can't be like that. There has to be some legal mechanism, means where they can put into motion a process, like in America, to impeach the president. Okay, in America, if you don't like the president, you feel that he committed a crime, there is a legal means built into the Constitution where you can impeach the president. You don't have to go surreptitiously take bare arms and carry out some method where one day make a movie how they try to assassinate the president. Doesn't work like that. The Constitution gives the people the means to legally, in Congress, to remove a sitting president from office because of crimes that he committed.
Without killing.
In a very noble way, you know, you've done something against the law, and therefore it's a decision of Congress based upon what he's done and all the laws that they have in place, whatever the rules are.
In France, they overtook the monarch because the monarch was living... Living large, larger than the people. The people said, well, we don't need a monarch. So they got rid of him, but not through impeachment.
Oh, well, exactly. So when you have absolute the war through a coup, a kesha, exactly. So that is not, that is something which it would appear very clearly how exactly is not the way of the Torah. The Torah gives, it has to be, I don't know how it works, but it has to be, that the Torah, in allowing Klal Yisrael to have a melech, sets up such a system, which lahavdil elef alfi avdolos, we can appreciate from America, where the people have the legal means to remove a melech from office if they feel he is not... It never happened this way.
It's the most violent, safe removal.
That's all corrupt. You're right. Because all of those things that happened were not according to the laws of the Torah. What all of the Avodah Zarah is was sanctioned by the Torah. The whole Nach is connected. Many things there. The Midos of some of the people involved.
I don't know any mechanism for the Midos.
I know you are correct, but it has to be...
The Sanhedrin.
It has to be that there is something in place. Because what he just said is, over here we find punishment. The people are punished because of the leaders. Why should the people be punished because of the behavior of the few? And the answer is, because you, the people, have put these leaders in their position. And if they're not behaving, they are corrupt, it is your duty to remove them. There's no such thing as absolute power. what exactly is the technique? It's not logical to say that if you have a corrupt leader, everyone should conspire and chop off his head. It's not logical that that should be the case in Klal Yisrael. You'll tell me in Tanakh, that's what they did. Well, that was not correct. Obviously, that's a given. The most of Tanakh is not correct. That's one of the arguments many people make why they tend with children not to focus on Tanakh. Because Tanakh is extremely violent, and many of the things that happen in Tanakh is clearly keneged kol ha-Torah kula. And unless you have a very good Rebbe, and unless you have enough time to properly bring out what the real message is.
Maybe they did it violently because there was no mechanism for doing it
violently. No, it's not. No. What are you talking about? The ones who did it violently were the ones who put in, made it even worse. The people who, the successors, were even bigger Rishon most of the time.
But not all Rishon were removed. We have these.
Because it was a corrupt system.
It's not real. Right. There aren't really all that many violent removals. I mean, it's an exaggeration. We had lots of really rotten kings, but, they persevered for a while, and then the next generation took over.
Okay, I don't know. It has to be studied more. Okay, whatever it is, but it is a very good point over here. But over here, there's no question that the Klal Yisrael are responsible. If there is corruption, the people do not have to take it. And Adarabba, there's a duty upon the people to stand up and to say, enough is enough. It's a very important lesson. Next. Now let's go further. Okay, let's go further. We have three different things. There's a parallel. What the parallel is, we have to see later on. The parallel is that the Rosheha, who are corrupt in Mishpat, Ben Adam Lachaveroi, because of that, that L'chore corresponds to Tzion Soda Sechoresh. The next level are the Yoira, the Kohanim who teach Isra V'Heter. And that resulted in Yerushalayim being Iyun Tiyem. And the third level, the corrupt prophets result in Har Habayis Lebamois Yoar. We have to see more later. Let's go to the next Chazal. Let's now go to the next Chazal. Pasuk Yud Aleph on the next page, 480. Roshecha b'shoichad yishpoitu v'choyhaneha b'mechir yoiru. Mr. Planik. I can't compete. It's too much, okay? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Roshecha b'shoichad yishpoitu v'choyhaneha b'mechir yoiru. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. Mikdash risho b'mnei mochora b'mnei shloisha dvarim shoha yuboy. Avo deserve v'gilarai shvichas, and everyone knows this. Risham hayu elder shetolu bitchoyin b'akadosh baruch hu asan lemikdash rishon d'chsev rashecha b'shoichad yishpaitu v'chaynei b'chay yoru v'nivya b'kesav yiksaimu v'yal Hashem yishrein leimah haloy Hashem b'kabeinu lo yisovu leinu ra'ah lefichach hei v'leim akadosh baruch hu. This is exactly what we just said before. Sholosh gezeros, reading the pasuk, sholosh gezeros k'neged shlosh averos shebiyodim shenemar lochein b'galchem tzion sodes sechoresh v'shlam iyin tiyeh. Now this chazal is from Masechta Yoma on Daf Tes, and the previous chazal was that Shabbos of Shabbos. What's the difference? The only difference is here is that this chazal is coming to focus specifically on the Bayis Rishon and makes mention of Avodah Zarah, Gil Yarayis, and Shvichas Damim. And L'choira, what the chazal is coming to allude to is that each, there's a whole new insight, each one of these three, the Rosheha, the Choyhaneha, and the Nivieha, L'choira, that's what it's alluding to, refers to of one is Avodah Zarah, one is Gilui Arayis, and one is Shvichas Dam. So what would you match up with each one? So for Avodah Zarah, L'choira, you would match up with Univieha Bakesef Yiktsoimu. L'choira, right? You're going backwards. What?
Or the Kohanim.
No, let me explain why. Let's do one thing at a time. First, Univieha, the prophets. Look, this week's Parshas Re'e. We learn about if you have a person who will come and try to incite you, you have a false prophet. What did the most famous false prophet try to do? To sway the pasuk, to go worship, what it says in the pasuk, worship idols. That's what it says in the pasuk. Ki yisischa ben imecha. Lamar, come, let's go worship God, said Hashem, did not command us. So you see from this week's parsha that the nisayon of the false prophet was to sway Klal Yisrael to worship idols. It's a pasuk. So I think that's fair game. Now, that's avodah. Now we have Gilui Arayos. That l'chayra is the koyhaneha. B'mechir yoyru. Yoyru, we learned, we refer, it doesn't say the word mishpat, it's matters of isur v'heter. Hilchos noshim is matters that fall in the category of isur v'heter. And eshes ish is osur. If it's another man's wife, asher osar lanu esuar rusois, v'hiti lanu esanusuois. Which means kol shekein Hashem prohibited to me someone else's wife. What?
Lanu,
not someone else. So l'chayra the koyhanecha who are path deciding matters relating to iser v'heter here are highlighted to be guilty of gilui arayos, setting the tone, permitting gilui arayos, and yishpoitu b'shoicha yishpoitu. Is mishpat bin odom lachaveroi, murder. When things do not go well in business, it's not so uncommon. There's murder. There's rivalry when it comes to money. Money leads to mishpat. When there's unhappiness, stealing, theft. It says the word damim, right? It says over here, it's boinei tzion b'damim. It's not a coincidence that the word damim means really two things. It means blood. And also means money. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the two are very much related, blood and money. So, very fascinating. The Gemara Masechta Yom over here is coming to prove almost that how do we know the Bayi Yisrushim was destroyed because of a desert Gilai Shvichas Damim? Look at the pasuk. The pasuk is Rosheha B'Shoicha Yishpoitu Shvichas Damim. The Chayanecha B'Mechir Yoyru is Gili Arayos. Univiecha B'Kesef Yiksoimu is Avoyde Zara. These three things. And because of this, the next person goes on to say, now we have to also try to match up. How would you match up those three things? I don't know. That's much harder. How would you match up the last three? Abama, it's a play on the word. No, he's very poetic. We always say Micha is very poetic. And the word Abama, Lebomos Yar, simply means a forest. The high places of the forest. But the word Bama also has a connotation of an altar.
Yeah.
So Lebomos Yoar, what?
That would be the Kohen.
Thou cursed spot. No. Avodah Zorah. Univieha. Univieha Bakesef Yiktsoimu. So we explained that we first saw Avodah Zorah. And that's the third thing. There's a three for three. The last one, the last punishment is corresponding to Univieha Bakesef Yiktsoimu. Is there's going to be a place of Avodah Zorah. Who inhabits, who occupies today the Har Habayis, the Beis HaMikdash? Okay? There's a bummer there. I wouldn't say the offer sacrifices, but it's a place of worship, a place of worship for people who we do not even view as human beings. For who yiyeh pere adam. Correct? Not my words. For who yiyeh pere adam, yodai ba'kol v'yad kol boy. It's like a jungle. The Har Habayis today is a jungle. That's what's there. A pair of Adam is occupying the Har Habayis, and they've made it into a place of Abama, a place of worship to who the Rambam calls a Meshuggah. Okay, Mohammed, he calls him a Meshuggah, a madman, a person who's illiterate. And all of a sudden he became the new God. How in the world did this happen over here? What?
Navi Sheker.
Navi Sheker. Not a god. Okay. All right. Fine. Take it back.
Does a bomber by Avodah Zorah in any other place in Tanakh occur with Yoah?
I do not know. I do not know. Probably not. I'm just trying because we have Micha. We've seen already since the beginning. His usage of words is very specific. He's always coming to play with the word. Now, what about the second example? The Iyun, the Yushalayim, Iyun etiyeh. Yerushalayim will be a wasteland. So what is a wasteland? So we have to, I'm just trying to suggest that it refers to Gilui Arayos. Why Gilui Arayos? The purpose of getting married is Peru Urivu. Umilu Es ha'aretz v'chiv shua. Fill up the earth. Get married, have children, populate the earth. If Yerushalayim is an Ian, what is an Ian? An Ian is an Ian over here in the Rashi in the Yud Beis, Digoyrin, and Machal. Maybe you have a good translation for us? Keeps.
Become heaps.
A wasteland. There's nothing there. That's the total opposite of the purpose of marriage. Alken yaz of ish.
It's like piles of rubble.
Piles of rubble. Nothing. That's just a chorban.
According to the Targum liyagrin, that's like yagas or adusa.
A mound, very good. You get, it's the same word. A mound of stones, a pile of stones. And the first expression, Tzion Sadeh Secharesh, it's a field that they plow. You plow a field in order for it to grow something, and you can make money. It produces produce. Produce is the economy, agricultural society. Eretz Yisrael is an agricultural society. To produce, it became a kibbutz. It just became a kibbutz, the Har Habayis. It was plowed over to produce grain to sell in the market. Money! If everything is about money, so look at our Kadosh Baruch Hu's, the irony. Hashem is saying, Tzion, the whole Tzion was built on a foundation of Gezel. So Hashem says, oh, you like money? It's so important to you. So we'll make the land itself a source of income for someone. Like they say, like I told you, the Bali Musa say, is that when a person does an Avera, Schar Avera, Avera, it's a very scary part. Is this true or not? I sure hope it's not. But the Bali Musa, they try to scare children. They try to say, don't look at things you're not supposed to look at. Because the way it works is, I don't know if it was a Baba Maisa, Schar, the reward for an Avera, is an Avera. Because if you go and you're fixated with a movie star that you should not be looking at, in the next world you'll be with her. You'll have to live with her in the same house.
The good news is she's going to my
brother. The good news? Maybe.
That's good news.
Interesting. I hear what you're saying. You're saying something very interesting. Okay, you're saying something very interesting, but it will still be a bushel chlima. Wherever she is, Abayisai, wherever she is, even if indeed on her level, who's to judge? Who's to judge? Maybe you're right. Maybe on her level, she was a very good person. This is her life. And she gave people simcha who have no mitzvos, Torah mitzvos. So you're right. Maybe she's going to Olam Haba. So you'll also go to Olam Haba, but her Olam Haba. It's going to be a very big embarrassment for that neshama. Which chelik in Olam Haba are you? You're letting, different sections, obviously. Which section? Well, I'm in the Hollywood section of Olam Haba. It's not going to be a very bakovetic place in Olam Haba. You may be in Olam Haba, it may be good there, but you're going to be embarrassed to be there as well. Okay, so you're saying very good. You're thinking making a good point, but it's still not a contradiction. Is that really true? I sure hope not. But it's definitely something that works to scare you. In any event, over here, there's poetry here. Hashem is saying, Tzion, the whole Tzion is a corrupt society. It's all about money. It's all about money. Money, money. Everything that goes on in Tzion and Yerushalayim, it's money. So Hashem, oh, you like money so much? So you know what? I'm going to destroy the whole Yerushalayim. They're going to level the entire place, and it's going to become one big farm. One big plot of land where you plant. That way the earth itself will be a source of income for whoever occupies the land. So where you used to live and have a Beis HaMikdash and have Bati Kinyosis, Bati Midrashites, a Beis Medrash, a yeshiva is a losing business, okay? You're always in the red. But you like money so much. So we'll shut down all the yeshivas, we'll raise the buildings, and we'll plant there on the ground, on the earth. We'll put the earth to good use. It will produce produce. And the produce will be sold in China. They'll export the produce. And now this land will be a source of money. If this is what you like, this is what you're going to get. So avoid the zorag yelirashi chastam in the ears over here. There does appear to be some parallel between the two. Okay, next. Now the next Maim Chazal, going down the few lines on the page. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down on page 480 in the Likutei Shas. In the Likutei Shas, 5 lines. Then Akayim Balavim Hamasayim Lebal Atvua the Beis Agronot Kedeshidu Lachem Abor Lemaisa Trumois Viesa Maisres Ein Lohem Loi Trumov Lemais. If you learn Daf Yomi, it's a very popular idea. A koyein hamisayeya bebeis hagronois. A koyein who helps out in the granary, in the silo. The koyein comes to the Baal HaBayis, oh, you need some help shoveling the kernels of grain I'll help you out. Why is he trying to help out the Baal HaBayis? Because the Baal HaBayis, when the day is over, must separate truma. And who will he give the truma to? Oh, this nice fellow who helped me today, out of the goodness of his heart, I will reciprocate the favor and give him the truma. That reciprocation is not a true gift. Basically, he bought it. He bought it by providing a service. You're not allowed, truma is not for sale. You're not allowed to buy truma. Truma is a gift. So if the Kohen does favors for the Baal HaBayis so that the Baal HaBayis should reciprocate and give him the truma, it appears as if the Kohen has purchased the truma. That is forbidden. If he does so, if you have any negias to the Kohen, you're not allowed to give him. You're not allowed to give a Kohen who's nogea bedavar. If a Kohen has done you a favor, not allowed to give him. Not allowed to give him. You have to give a stranger. A Kohen who is a stranger. Anyone you have a negius to, it becomes corrupt. The system very quickly becomes corrupt. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back.
Was the truma, was it given directly to one Kohen, or was it given to a pool of Kohanim?
It depends. It doesn't really matter. But it doesn't really matter.
Some Kohanim can get all the truma.
That's right. So it's not fair. And some are poor. So it could very well be that different times in history, when there was a better system of government in place, they had a better, a more fair distribution. And it could be there were some times when it was just, you know, Hefker, do whatever you want. The Wild West. It's very likely that in different periods of Jewish history, there were different systems put into place based upon the needs or the circumstances of what was occurring in that time. But you're right, technically speaking, you give it to whoever you want. Now, this is an exception. The Gemara does make mention of an exception of buying. You are allowed to buy if you are not the recipient. You're allowed to buy to direct who should get it. And the Gemara's example is if you have a grandson. If a person has a grandson who is a Kohen, I'm a Yisrael, I cannot eat from this truma. Impossible. I'm a Yisrael. It's Misa Deshamayim. For a Yisrael to eat truma, it's Misa Deshamayim. So I can't eat it. But I have a daughter who happened to marry a Kohen. And they have children. My grandchildren. And being that the Yichus follows the father, my grandson is a Kohen. And my grandson doesn't have what to eat. My grandson is dirt poor. And he's not very ambitious to go and seek out help himself. So I, the grandfather, want to help him. So what do? I go to a Baal HaBayis who has a big silo, and I say to him, listen, you're going to go give a lot of truma to someone. Here is $100, whatever you want, whatever you give him, and give the truma to my grandson. That is permitted. You're allowed to pay a Kohen to direct where the truma will be given, provided that the one who's paying the money,
the Yisrael,
the grandfather, as I said, the grandfather, correct, the grandfather who is a Yisrael is paying another Yisrael to give his truma to his grandson who is a Kohen. That is permitted.
Okay, Why did the Gemara give only that he's doing it at the granary? Suppose
you're right, it's an example. You're right, you are correct. It doesn't make a difference. Any favor. The Gemara is just giving a common example. Gemara can't go give every example. The Gemara gives the common example. It's a term. Like every, the whole Gemara is just terms. Koyein hamisayeya bebeis hagronos. It's just a term. And of course it means any type of reciprocation. Any reciprocation is equivalent to koyein hamisayeya, and it is categorically forbidden. It has to be a gift. The recipient is not allowed to have any benefit. A grandchild today, you would think that today in our society where many grandparents are supporting their grandchildren, so you would think like it's like me. It's all one and the same. You're right. It's very strange. Maybe it goes to show that our society is not a healthy society. But in the halacha, it doesn't matter. In halacha, a grandchild is not considered an extension of yourself with regard to this specific halacha. A child is. It's not only shach a child. Well, I guess it is, because let's see, if your daughter is married to a kohen. Right, your son-in-law. Let's say they get divorced, and they have children. Or let's say he dies, the son-in-law dies. And they have children. So she is allowed to eat truma, right, because she was married to a kohen, and she has a child from that kohen. Are you allowed to pay the kohen, the Yisrael, to give the truma to your daughter? In this instance,
even if she's still married, she's still allowed to eat truma.
If she's married, then it could be that in that case, you're right. In that case, it's also forbidden. You're right. What difference does it make if married or not married? You're right. That you're not allowed to do. Oh, but it's not me. I'm a Yisrael. It's not me. My daughter. She's the married to a kohen. It's also. Because a child, even when they're married, is a child. And it's considered to be an extension of yourself.
But the grandchild can eat?
Mutter. The grandchild is mutter.
So the mother cannot eat, but the child
correct.
Can eat.
You can direct the Yisrael to give the truma to the grandchild. It must be given directly to the grandchild, but not to your daughter.
And the son will can eat?
Well, once the grandchild gets it, he can do with it whatever he wants. It's out of your jurisdiction at that point in time.
If he wants to, maybe.
But that's not your problem. That's not your issue. Your issue is purchasing truma from a Yisrael. You are not benefiting. But my daughter is going to bet. Oh, your daughter is less like you. A child is like an extension of yourself. But a grandchild, at least in this halacha, every halacha is unique. Now going back, over here we have over here the corruption. What is the corruption over here? The Pasuk says, "V'imlasan." Now the second line of that second line of Chazal on page 480, "V'imlasan harizeh chilul hakodesh." If a person, a koyein is the mesayer of beis hagronos, it is a desanctification, is it a disgrace? You have defiled the sanctity of truma by buying it. By a Kohen himself, if a Kohen himself comes to a Yisrael and he says, here, I'll give you a few, anyway, you have to get rid of it. Anyway, you can't eat it. You're not allowed to eat it. So, it's anyway, you're not going to gain. So I'll give you a few dollars. You'll have more than you would have had. I'll give you $5. Give it to me. I don't know whatever it is. I don't know how you want to define it, but whatever however you want, you say Mishul and Gavoya Kozachu. Is it possible to buy it? Is it called? It's not even called yours. It's called Hashem's. I do not know. There's probably machlokes in the Gemara. When it comes to truma, some learn it's called Mishulchan Gavoya Kozachu. It's really Hashem's. You're not even the owner. Once you separate it, you say by kachem. You say by truma as well. Could be.
Do you wait online, right, as soon as I finish, he's there. Not to anything, just
you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to be misayeya.
He's not helping
you. No, then it's mutter.
He's badgering.
It's mutter. Badgering is also mutter. It never happened, someone badgered you. Badgering is also mutter. Right. But doing something, a service, I have done for you something that ordinarily you would have to pay for. If I didn't do this, you would be paying money for someone to do this for you. I'm saving you this expense. So that's called a favor. That's called That is something that is significant, and therefore the kohen is not allowed, the Yisrael is not allowed to give that kohen the truma. And if he does give him the truma out of reciprocation for what the kindness, he has defiled the sanctity of the truma. I raise the chila kodesh shenemar v'lo yichalu es kodshe b'nei Yisrael v'hei michal l'noi son yoyser mikhe namru. Let's go further. There's another sin that he did. Truma son ein a truma u'maisroi son ein a maisros v'hegdeish an ein a hegdeishos. He goes further. This Chazal says that if a person indeed does so, you give truma in reciprocation for a favor, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah. He's going so far to say, this Chazal is going so far to say that the Yisrael does not get credit in Shemayim for having given the Mekayim, the mitzvah, the rights of truma, because you didn't give it, you sold it. You sold it to someone for a favor. When it comes to Ma'is, it's the same thing. When it comes to Hegdish, it's if you're only going to give the Beis HaMikdash assets because they did you a favor, they buy whatever the cases are. Valeina cost of Oimer. This is what the pasuk here is discussing. Rashecha b'shecha yishpaitu v'chayanecha b'mechi yoyru v'hamokam v'hamokoy mevi aleim shosh peronis chado d'chsev l'chem b'glalchem siyon sadsechorish v'shlam yintiyah v'harbayis l'bomus yar. So he's saying, now he says that we have three different things. He says here, Chumas in Chuma, Maisrois in the Maisrois, Vegdeshon in Hegdeshos. So with Chuma we understand. What about Maisr? I guess it's the same thing if a Levi, I assume it's the same exact thing if a Levi comes to you and says, here, I will do you a favor, I'll give you money, give me the Maisr Rishon. L'chor, that's what it means. And what about Hegdish? What does that mean exactly? Hegdish could be that Hegdish, let's discuss Kodshe Kodashim. I'm just making an assumption, so it could be that I'm wrong. When a person brings a Karbon Chatos, what happens? Who eats the meat of the Karbon Chatos? The Kohen. That's a good meal. He has a good dinner. Lamashcha, when you eat it, it says in the Gemara, you have to eat it with dignity. They serve, they cook it to your liking, however you like it. Rare, well done, okay, medium, and they serve condiments. It has to be eaten malchus. We learned that picnic tables, all the models of the Beis HaMikdash omit the picnic tables that existed in the Azara. Because when the Kohanim ate kodshim, they have to eat in the state of lemoshcha, which Rashi says ligadula with relish, with dignity. And that means you have to sit down like a mensch and eat it in the Azara. Oh, ein yeshiva be'azara el lemalche be'stavid bulvad. That's only when you're not eating. But when you're eating, you're allowed to sit down. When you're not eating, you're not allowed to sit down. But if you're eating, you're eating the karbonis. This says Mefarshim. Most of Mefarshim learn like this. It's not Mestavir. They stood in the Azara when they ate. That's how you eat. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do that. You have to sit like a mensch. And it says especially, it says lemoshcha. So I want a good meal tonight. You know, I see a guy online. He's about to bring a carbon chatos. He did an avera. He's bringing carbon chatos. There's a whole bunch. He can like, I don't know how this works. There were mishmaros. There were 24 groups of kohanim. There was obviously a system in place. But it seems here, a person is trying to abuse the system. He found himself a technique, somehow, some way, to abuse the system. And he pushes his way into the Beis HaMikdash, and he says, I'm a certified Kohen. Here I am. I see you bring carbon chatos. You know, I have not eaten a good meal, in a couple of weeks already. You know, let me offer your carbon chatos on your behalf. You can't eat it anyway, because you are your Yisroel. And Kodshei Kodoshim is only eaten by the Kohanim. So you know what here?
Kohen's wife about to eat?
No. No, Kohen's have not. Only Zechadim, only males. Only males. How do they survive, period? They had no lid. Lo yechelik v'nachala l'sheva levi. Hashem hu nachalosan. How do they survive, period? That's the big mystery. Big mystery. How did the Kohanim, the sheva levi, all of the Kohanim, all of the Levim, who did not have any chelik in Eretz Yisrael, an agricultural society? If you don't have farmland, you're finished. Where are you going to have parnasa? How are you going to make a living? How are you going to survive? Where are you going to grow some grain just to eat bread? So that's a very big mystery. So you're going to say they got the truma? Was that enough for everyone? Truma? The karbonos? You only work 2 days a year.
Kabbalah's not, but Truma, the wife is la'atif.
What? Truma, the wife is la'atif. So that is a very big mystery. How did the Kohanim Shevet Levi survive? They have no nachla. Hashem hu nachalosan.
It was cities
given to them by they had a place to live. They didn't have Shevet Levi had their own miklat, and the Kohanim had 24 cities that was in the chelik of Shimon in the tribe of Shimon. And the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael was where the Kohanim had cities to live in. They gave them cities there. But I'm not certain. I take that back. They were given, but they're not given land. It means they were given a place to live. They were given home and board. That's it. They had a little apartment somewhere. That's it. No land. They don't have any assets. It wasn't like today. Today it's a service society. You're a professional. You're an accountant. You're a lawyer. You're a doctor. In those days, there was no services. Parnasa came from the earth. If you don't own a piece of land, you have nothing. Very rarely. Very rarely. Yeah, very. The charamim, gifts. That was yechidim shebi yechidim. Very, very few individuals had land because of some very rare circumstance. But the average person had nothing. The average Levi and Kohen had absolutely nothing. How did he survive? How did his family survive? It's a mystery. Okay, some people will tell you that today it's a mystery how anyone survives. How the working man survives. Forget about the Kohel Yungman. How does a working man survive today? Okay, it's a mystery how they survive. We do not know. But the Torah does provide for them something. There's something called Truma, something called Meiser. Meiser Sheni, I think one of the Rishonim said that Meiser Sheni was a very big support for many of these people. What do we mean Meiser Sheni? If you have people who have produce, you have to bring up the produce from everywhere in Eretz Yisrael. It's a lot, 10%. And what do you do? If you come, you can't carry it, so you could divert it into cash, and you bring it up to Yerushalayim. With the money, you purchase food in Yerushalayim. The people who came did not have they only came to visit for a day or two. They were on the next flight out. And there was no way in the world they come with $100,000, Gevirim, who made a killing in the market by selling all of their produce. Now they have $100,000 of Meiser Rishon. What are they going to do with it? They're going to go eat themselves $100,000 in Yerushalayim? No way, impossible. So what did they do? They gave it to the Kohanim. There was a fund. In Yerushalayim, there was a free soup kitchen every single day that was funded by Meiser Sheni money. Okay, that's one approach to explain how they were able to survive. Okay, it doesn't answer all the questions, but it definitely it provides a steady income into Yerushalayim. There was free food. There was free Meiser, an abundance of free Meiser Sheni food found in Yerushalayim, because the average person who was successful could not possibly eat all of his Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim. He just came there for a few days and wanted to go back home where he came from. And in the meantime, what am I going to do with all this Meiser Sheni money? Let someone else enjoy it. That was a technique also that the Torah employs to guarantee the survival of Shevet Levi. So here it says, and getting back to the point, what was the question when it comes to a carbon? You have a kohen, he's standing online, and the kohen sees, this fellow is about to bring a carbon chatas. I have not eaten a good meat meal in days. So I cut the line, and I say to him, listen, don't let this guy bring your carbon. Let me be the kohen. I'm also qualified to bring the car. I know how to do shchita, a kabbalah, hoylocha, zrika. I know the whole business. And that way, I'll be able to eat. So he says, no. I like going to this kohen. A chazaka. I go to this kohen. I like this guy. This guy, he always services me. He knows how to service me well. So you say, how much does he give you? He gives me nothing. What do you mean gives me? I bring a carbon. So you know what? I'll give you 50 bucks. Here, 50. You would walk away here with nothing. So now I'm giving you $50. So let me be the one that's makrif. In the meantime, I just got for myself a meal that's worth $500. Enough meat for one day, whatever, whatever. Just throwing out numbers. So that is corrupt. That totally turns the Beis HaMikdash into a business. And when the Beis HaMikdash turns into a business, it's all about money, finished. That's exactly what it says over here in this passage. The passage over here says they're all corrupt. They're doing three things. We're trying to connect three things. The Rosh Hashanah gives three examples. Teruma, Meiser, and Kotchim. How would you match them up over here? You match up Kotchim to, you have the Kohanim. So the Kohanim, maybe we'd say the Nevi'echa is Kotchim, the Nevi'echa, I don't know. Kohanim is Truma, and Rosh Hashanah is the Meiser. I don't know, but it seems that this Chazal is trying to match up these three leaders in reference to three different acts of corruption that took place in Yerushalayim in regard to Truma, Meiser, and Kotchim. Everything is for sale, even the kitchen sink. Nothing cannot be sold for what?
I don't think these things are so terrible. I said you're not allowed to do them, but they're not like vicious. You're giving to one coin as opposed to because he's your friend or because you like him or you owe him a favor.
But it corrupts the system.
I don't think that's...
Once money is involved, it's corrupt.
All day long, you
the Torah is also. It is also.
You give business to people that you like. You're not allowed to do it. Not allowed to do it. But it's not weird in my mind. It's not.
You have
a
choice.
Thing.
When you come to the Beis HaMikdash, you can give your truma. Or truma is not only in the Beis HaMikdash. You can give your truma to any kohen that you like. And now, by someone giving you money, you're giving it to them. That is corrupt, plain and simple. This is not a business. Truma. If you're dealing with business, you work in a business. So of course, the rules of business are not the rules of the Beis HaMikdash. The standards of the Beis HaMikdash are higher standards than the work world. I have an example. I bought a ticket for a religious event. Okay, now, I used to work in this field a little bit, very little. I bought a ticket for a religious event. The ticket cost $25. Okay, fine, $25, fair price. I pay for the ticket, and don't try to guess what I'm referring to. I paid for the ticket, I filled out the whole form, made a couple of mistakes, and rejected it online. It can be very tedious sometimes. Rejected until I figure out it's no good. Fine, everything is finally finished, fine. 10 minutes later, okay, all ready to go. I press the button, and it says the charge is not $25, it's $37. Why? There's a $16, what did I say? What did I say?
$12.
$12. No, what did I say? $39, whatever it was.
Left out the $350 processing fee.
No, that didn't charge me. They did?
$12.
Oh, $12 in inhaling plus a $3. So whatever it was. So let's say, can I say it came with $40? I said, what? You should have told this to me. You should have told this to me up front. So if I was buying a ticket to a concert, I was buying a ticket to a baseball game, I was buying a ticket to a movie, listen, this is America. In America, you can get away with it. If they would go and they would tell me up front that it's $40, I wouldn't buy the ticket. So they lied to me. This is marketing. This is what they teach you in marketing. You lie. That's how you make money. You lie. You tell a person, you show on the brochure, a ticket costs $25. And then you get the person, it's a bargain. You come into the store, you buy, and then as they already have your credit card in their hand, as is an incredible technique in society, you press the button. It's now $40. Had I known it was $40, I would not have bought the ticket. Maybe I would, but maybe not. But you already took my credit card. You already wasted half an hour of my time. And you know what? You got me. You're smart. You outsmarted me. Yes, you're very good. Very good. You. I thought I'm a clever guy. You got me. Okay? That's how the world works. When you buy a ticket to a baseball game, you buy a ticket to go to the theater, to a Broadway show, you go to the circus. That's the Geisha world, right? That's the way it works. Now, the truth is, when I used to work in this, we wouldn't charge a person more, trick a person. I also used to trick people. Neither can I give me either, right? I wouldn't trick a person more than $3. $2.95, $3. On a $25 ticket, there's a certain understanding you don't deceive people more than a certain percent. It's not nice to go charge almost 25%, almost 50%. Okay? They charge another almost 50%. More than this. Unbelievable, right? We wouldn't do that. We would not do that in the even in the Goyisha world. I would not do that. It would be considered to be unethical. It would be considered veiled misconduct. And here, I'm buying a ticket to a religious event, or an event that is built on the foundation of Torah, near Shemayim. So I say to myself, I'm very disappointed. And there's nothing I can do, and you're right, you know, but I'm very disappointed. I really thought that Torah had higher standards. I really thought. I thought when you go to an event that is represents Yadus, we say you get an aliyah in the Torah. What do you say when you get an aliyah? Asher bochar bonu mikol ho'amin v'nosan lanu es Torahso. Hashem selected us. Just because the goyim do it? The goyim do it? So we should be like the goyim? So you know what? Don't make a bracha. When you get your aliyah, don't make a bracha asher bochar bonu mikol ho'amin. Don't make that bracha. Because if this organization feels that they're no different than the goyim, what are you making the bracha for? That's how I feel. Now, obviously, I'm wrong. I'm crazy. Obviously, because the whole world does. This is the way the world is. But there should be a higher standard. Here, you're dealing with the Beis HaMikdash. In business, there's no question about it. That's the way. It's not what you know. It's who you know. You do business. There are people that do favors for you. There's a reciprocation. Adarabah. I can give the business to whoever I want. You did me a favor. We're dealing with fair and square. There's reciprocation. But in the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem says there are people here who work in the Beis HaMikdash that are dirt poor, the Kohanim and the Levim, and it's your duty to give them a gift. And if you're going to go start turning this into a business, then you're corrupting, you're being machalel, the whole sanctity of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash has higher standards.
Isn't it true, Rabbi Levinberg, that I've read through, I went to Erich and other places, where the gain always goes to the Beis HaMikdash.
That's right.
If there's a loss,
we're not out to deceive you, right? So the Beis HaMikdash.
The standards are different.
The standards are different as far as you, the individual, to give. To give. Not so corruption there. What corruption is there? You have an obligation when there's a situation. And the question is, everything is up front. Everything is clearly up front. We can either go this way or this way. The rules are you as an individual have an obligation to be machshev, appreciate the Beis HaMikdash, and not take advantage, and give them more. But here the Kohanim are saying, here, I'll pay you for the Truma. I'll pay you. The Kohanim themselves are taking advantage. The other Kohanim, you have an your obligation is to give to any coin. It's a gift to the servants of Hashem. And now Kohanim are coming to take advantage. Those who have money, there's no comparison to your case. That here, there is a system in place, and now the system is becoming corrupt because there are Kohanim who are coming to ask for money, and by getting money, then they'll be redirected to them at the expense of their fellow Kohanim. And then it becomes a bidding war. It just turns into a bidding war, and then the whole thing is a business. It's not anymore Torah. So Hashem says, what do I need this for? It's all about money? Money? So it's a losing business. Let's shut it down, and we'll make it into farmland. And it'll be a winning business. Tzion, Sode, Sechoresh. We'll make it into one big farm. It'll produce crops. We'll sell it in China. And you'll make a lot of money. You want money? I'll give you money. You want a Beis HaMikdash? It's not a business. Okay? Am I wrong? Mr. Plotnik, I'm wrong?
You're not wrong, but you have another opinion.
Okay. I accept. Okay, I accept. All right, so this is the second Chazal. Let's now go to Lachain Biglalchem Tzion. That's already the next pasuk. So we'll wait for that. Let's take a look over here quickly at the Chaim Sanach. Okay, just to start, maybe what time is it? It's already late, so maybe we should already. It's really that we'll stop. Okay, we'll stop here.